From CBS News, a labor of love for labor. We work hard for the money. 153 million of us have jobs grinding out on average 1,789 hours every year. Nearly 8 million more are in the labor force toiling to find jobs. We're about 400% more productive than we were in 1950. And this weekend, Labor Day weekend, the nation recognizes and thanks its workers for their toil and trouble, their brainstorming and elbow grease, their contributions to the greatest economy on earth. I'm Barry Bagnato, and with my colleagues here at CBS News, let's explore topics and trends that are impacting work life here in the United States.
My first jobs were picking up golf balls on a golf course, working at Sears, working on the back of a trash truck. All those things teach you the value of hard work.
Tom Perez is the son of Dominican immigrants. His father died when he was 12, and a family friend, a laid-off Teamster, stepped in to be his surrogate dad. Perez has had a lot of jobs, including county councilman, law school professor, the Justice Department's top civil rights enforcer. Since July 2013, he has been U.S. Secretary of Labor.
The lesson I learned from growing up in Buffalo, New York, Barry, was when my surrogate father lost his job, he had roughly a 10th grade education, and he had a middle class life, because you could have a middle class life without a high school degree. And it seems to me today, we're no longer in the world of you work one job for 30 years, where 30 years could mean 30 gigs.
How would you describe the state of the American workplace on Labor Day 2016?
We've had 70 months in a row of job growth, a record number of months. We've seen over the last 6.5 years, businesses creating almost 15 million jobs. We've got 5.8 million job openings right now. There's incredible opportunity.
Why don't upbeat numbers translate into more satisfaction on the part of, say, white male workers and others who feel left out by this economy?
If you're someone who has less than a high school degree, you have a higher unemployment rate. There's an undeniable education dividend. And a lot of the angst that I see in towns like Buffalo is from folks with less than a high school degree who are concerned that their children's lives are going to be more precarious than their own.
If we look at sectors like construction or manufacturing or even the retail trades, there's been relatively little change for the past few years.
Cornell University economist Stephanie Thomas.
I'm not sure that we're going to be able to get the levels of growth in manufacturing that we see in financial activities and healthcare and business services. I'm not sure that there is a fix for it at this point.
Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump thinks there is.
Skilled craftsmen and tradespeople and factory workers have seen the jobs they loved shipped thousands and thousands of miles away. Many towns once thriving and humming are now in a state of total disrepair. This wave of globalization has wiped out totally our middle class. It doesn't have to be this way. We can turn it around.
I'm Jim Crisula. North Carolina is considered a crucial state to the outcome of the November presidential election. It's grown to become the ninth biggest state, with rapidly changing demographics. There are huge political differences and viewpoints between growing, generally liberal urban areas and far more conservative rural areas. It continues to evolve from its original employment dependence on agriculture and blue-collar manufacturing jobs. Many voters realize that.
In Wilkesboro, we were a factory town. We don't have many factories anymore, and it's because of the NAFTA.
At a glass processing facility, huge fans do little more than blow the hot, humid, heavy air around rather than cool things down. Over the drone and roar of a giant glass tempering oven, employees debate a pledge from Donald Trump.
You've been in production your whole life. Donald Trump says he can bring these jobs back that have gone overseas. Do you think he can do that? Can he make good on that promise?
No, Trump doesn't have a plan. I don't think he knows what he's doing. He's just a businessman. He's not a politician. He doesn't know how to work with people.
Owner Jim Williams is also skeptical of Trump's promise.
Truthfully, I think it's going to be rather difficult for anybody to be able to stand up to that kind of a promise. Personally, I don't think there's a politician out there that's going to bring the jobs back to the U.S. I think the fact that you see jobs coming back to the U.S. speaks to the manufacturing sources and entrepreneurs and people that are out there right now that you're seeing a lot of those products come back.
A lot of people argue that if you bring those jobs back, American-made goods will end up costing consumers more money.
We have a great manufacturing force, and it's capable of figuring out how to produce the products and how to do them with quality and the service. I don't think that that's as big a problem as people might want to make it out to be.
Sweating profusely as he handled a half-inch thick piece of glass, Willie told me he thinks Trump can convince companies to bring jobs back from overseas.
Well, he is a businessman. Hillary ain't never built nothing but herself.
This first-time voter is thinking of job growth down the road.
I'm more concerned with my future than I am the right now, and I think he is the strongest candidate that will have long-term impact.
And when it comes to a job, glass cutter Nate Wilkins says simply,
I'm just glad to have one.
As are many, many other people. Jim Grisula, CBS News, Kernersville, North Carolina.
Democrat Hillary Clinton argues that manufacturing is coming back. Her restoration plan includes tax incentives to encourage factory investment and expanded training and apprenticeships.
We will help more people learn a skill or practice a trade and make a good living doing it. We will give small businesses like my dad's a boost, make it easier to get credit. Way too many dreams die in the parking lots of banks.
But our CBS News business analyst Jill Schlesinger sees the American economy shifting inexorably towards services.
In 1960, the percentage of workers who were employed by manufacturing here in the U.S., 24%. This year, that 24% down to 8%. So that's a pretty dramatic slide, and it has happened over a multiple of decades.
Why do you think Americans have such an emotional attachment to manufacturing?
Many people lament the decline of manufacturing because that has meant that a lot of folks who don't have college degrees have really been struggling.
Can new manufacturing jobs be created in the United States?
I just don't see how that's going to happen. We're not just talking about trade deals. What we're talking about is technology. And I think that what's really important to note is that even if a whole slew of manufacturers brought their operations back to the U.S., and I think that, sure, there would be some people who were employed, but I think the vast majority of those jobs may be actually obsolete because of technology. So the question is, if you brought everything back, would there be robots doing those jobs or people doing those jobs? The workforce is still going to have to probably have more technical training to conduct what's necessary to do those manufacturing jobs of the future.
Jill Schlesinger. Next, we'll take you to a job fair. What's hot? What's not? America Works from CBS News.
Listen to the news right now in your car with the CBS Radio News app. Just download our free app to your iOS or Android device to stream the news you need on Apple CarPlay or Android Auto. Listen to the latest news right now or to your favorites like Face the Nation and the Weekend Roundup. The CBS Radio News app. Download it on your phone now to use in Apple CarPlay and Android Auto today.
I'm in almost every school bus and classroom.
I go to school with your children.
We say the Pledge of Allegiance together.
You see me around the neighborhood and you tell me that I'm a pretty good kid.
Well, I'm one out of every five children in America and I'm struggling with hunger.
This problem is closer than you think. My teacher tells me we can grow up to be whatever we want.
I want to grow up to be someone who doesn't go to bed hungry.
There's enough food in this country to feed everybody.
Please visit feedingamerica.org today and find your local food bank for ways to help.
Every dollar you donate helps provide 8 meals for kids like me, quietly struggling with hunger.
Together, we are Feeding America, brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Download now the updated CBS Radio News apps for Android and iOS. You'll get the latest breaking news, text alerts, and access to the CBS Radio News Twitter feeds. All this, along with the great news, features, and shows you've come to expect. 60 Minutes, Face the Nation, The Weekend Roundup, and more, all when you want them. For the best news reporting, download the CBS Radio News mobile app for iOS and Android today.
We have offices all throughout the United States. We have over 1,000.
At a New York hotel, employers meet hopeful job seekers.
We're looking for outside sales reps for a construction equipment rental company.
Sales reps, not what many of the people lined up outside well down a city block were hoping for.
Verizon, which is sales, FedEx and Hertz, and they were mostly sales.
Sarah Butler didn't find the job she was seeking.
You know, there's a lot of people out here. Look at this. They're going to be all disappointed when they go in there.
This man, Tom, feels the frustration.
I was working in financial services, and the division I was working in got liquidated. That's what I think a lot of people are here for. You're being downsized.
He has been pounding the pavement 7 months.
Well, you know, when you're out of work, you start to feel really down on yourself. So now everything that you had and you thought was part of you is no longer there.
Sabrina Woldai came from Atlanta. She remains positive.
I would love to work here. I'm really interested in getting a job within communication, marketing, events management, or international relations.
Software engineering, IT, that's what Tim Aiden is into. He says the trick is to remain agile, tailor your resume.
You have to customize it to the company's needs and wants. And also, if you have any relevant project, you should use that as a talking point.
The fastest growing occupations, they include, the Labor Department says, wind turbine service techs, personal financial advisors, and especially healthcare workers. In fact, 12 of the top 20 are in healthcare. Occupations in decline include postal service workers, machine setters, and textile industry employees of all kinds. Jennifer Grass at CareerBuilder.com.
61% of the 173 occupations expected to lose jobs over the next 5 years are in the middle wage category. So I think we really need to find a way to reskill and upskill workers at scale. Otherwise, what you're going to see is those middle wage workers are going to become more susceptible to unemployment, or they're going to have to move into lower paying roles that may not support them and their families.
Hiring Lab, the research arm of Indeed.com, discovered fewer than one in six Americans has what it calls an opportunity job. Chief economist Tara Sinclair says that's a job with a wage that at least keeps up with the rising cost of living.
We've been really concerned about, as economists, seeing that a small percentage of the overall workforce actually has these jobs today. And one thing that really surprised me was that there was a statistically significant difference in the concentration of opportunity jobs in red states versus blue states.
Red states for Republicans, blue for Democrats.
And it's blue states that have the much greater concentration of opportunity jobs.
And what does that say to you?
There's probably some underlying reasons why voting patterns might be following the economic conditions.
Lizzie Adala wants an opportunity to be an investigative journalist someday.
I moved to the United States from Canada in 1996 when I was 6 years old.
At a table at a busy Starbucks, she told me when she was in college at Northwestern, she got a letter stating she had overstayed her visa and was therefore an illegal, undocumented immigrant.
As you can imagine, I was completely blindsided by the news. I felt like I was getting evicted from the only home that I have really ever known.
On her graduation day, though, President Obama gave her a present, announcing the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, DACA, so she could get a work permit.
Immigrants have always kind of been a scapegoat for the U.S., but the truth is immigration is actually a sign of a healthy economy. They create jobs. There are actually 1.3 million undocumented immigrants who own businesses. My dad is actually one of them. He employs several U.S. citizens. My mother is an honorary lifetime member of the Texas PTA. They are American. And the only thing that's missing is a single sheet of paper.
At FAIR, the Federation for American Immigration Reform, President Dan Stein says U.S. workers are being pushed aside.
Immigrants are no longer complementary. They're often substitutes for American workers, which means that they have negative impacts, particularly on the lower skilled levels of the American workforce.
Isn't there some truth to the argument that immigrants perform a lot of the jobs that Americans don't want to?
Immigration under properly controlled limits can be beneficial to the country. In the levels we see today, it's far too high. Think of immigration as salt. You put the right amount of salt in the stew, and it tastes better. But top of the salt shaker falls off, and basically you've ruined the whole dish. We're in danger of the top of the salt shaker falling off.
This American Farm Bureau video warns immigrant guest worker shortages are hurting farms.
My name is Bernie Teal. Sunburst Farms has been in my family for over 35 years. Last year, I had to do something I'd never done before. Destroy 10 acres of good squash. I wasn't able to find enough workers.
CBS News correspondent Peter King has the view from Florida, where 80% of the state's orange crop is picked by guest workers.
Agriculture is facing a labor crisis. It's all about migrant farm workers who are legally in the U.S. In an American Farm Bureau Federation video, the organization's president, Zippy Duval, says growers in at least 20 states are facing labor shortages because of government red tape.
Our country has got to make up its mind whether we're going to import labor or whether we're going to import our food. Rural America is at stake here.
We are getting enough to harvest it, but getting the skilled labor that we need is a challenge.
Steve Johnson owns Johnson Harvesting, which grows citrus, blueberries, and watermelon over a nearly 150-mile stretch of central and south central Florida. Johnson employs about 300 seasonal workers, mostly from Mexico. He says agriculture's demand for that labor is high. The system that gets them here is broken.
Everything is done the old-fashioned way, by snail mail and paperwork.
He says the application process and required lead time don't match the reality of his business.
We have to turn in what we call our petition 60 to 75 days before the date of need. Well, in Florida, you know, the weather changes a lot, and so crops change. And so it's hard for us to predict out what's going to be happening or when we're going to need those people.
For the last harvest, Johnson says the paperwork and other government delays set him back by more than a week.
One day behind, it takes us 2 days to catch up.
And lost time is lost money.
We're at the disadvantage. We're at the bottom of the totem pole, so to speak.
Johnson says he and other growers don't have any alternative.
It's very frustrating. You kind of learn to deal with it. You don't really have a lot of choices because there are no American workers.
Why not?
They're not dependable. They might show up one day and then the next day they may not be there. Or they leave early or expect to get paid a lot more than what we can afford to pay.
Johnson says his Mexican workers get room and board, and they earn good money for hard work.
You know, they're bringing home $600-$700 a week. And in some instances, they're good workers. They're not so good workers. You know, they're down the $400 or $500 mark.
He says it costs him about $800 per worker for visa and transportation just to set up each harvest season.
That's $240,000 that I've laid out before I harvest the first crop at all, not including my crop inputs that I've already put into it.
Johnson wants the immigration and guest worker visa system to move faster, be more responsive to growers' needs.
It's got to be a simpler, cheaper way to do it. If we want to stay competitive as a global player in produce and anything else that we do as Americans.
Or paraphrasing the words of the agriculture industry executive we heard from earlier, it's a matter of deciding whether we should be importing labor or almost everything that farmers now grow here.
Pasando el trapo sobre la mesa y está.
La Santa Cecilia song Ice El Hielo is a tale of undocumented workers. Ava's a maid and Jose a landscaper. There's a rich tradition of music about labor and for labor in this country. We'll explore it next on America Works.
No sea cosa que la acuse de ilegal.
So when you get to the corner of Smith and Orchard, you're going to want to take a
You
left.
Are not going to
then
believe
what you're
this.
Do is turn
Marcy
into Marcy
and Brad
Avenue
just broke up,
and, go past
and apparently
the first three
she's happy
and
about
then take
it.
The next left.
I don't really think she's happy, but
you should be
who
there.
Am I to judge, right?
Park
anyway,
on the right.
That's
I'll
what I heard last
tonight.
Night.
It's hard to concentrate on two things at once, like texting and driving. Stop the text, stop the wrecks. How will you stop texting and driving? Tell us at stoptextstopwrecks.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
When I grow up, I want to be a new pair of blue jeans.
When I grow up, I want to be a kid's first computer.
I want a warm place on a cool day.
I want to be a bike that races around the country.
I want to be a bench on a forest trail.
When I grow up, I don't want to be a piece of garbage. And if you recycle me, I won't be.
Give your garbage another life. Recycle. Learn how at iwanttoberecycled.org. Brought to you by Keep America Beautiful and the Ad Council.
Is that a faucet running?
That's not a faucet. That's a river rushing through the forest. Forest rivers provide over 100 million people with clean water to drink.
What? I can't hear you because of the vacuum.
That's not a vacuum. That's the trees in the forest cleaning up the air we breathe.
I didn't know the trees were so amazing.
Yep, and the forest gives us shade, trees to climb.
That's awesome. Let's go explore some more.
Visit the forest today and enjoy all it does just for you. To learn more about the forest and find one near you, go to discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
So, I'm a dog, and I just got adopted by this new human guy, and I'm starting to wonder how he got along without me. I mean, okay, something as simple as walking around the block. He's got this leash thing, and he puts me on one end and him on the other, and I'm just taking him around. I think he's afraid of getting lost. Without that leash and me guiding him along, I don't think he'd find his way back home. But it's kind of cute.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
Hello, Democrats. I'm Rich Trumka, president of the AFL-CIO.
Labor leaders voiced strong support for Hillary Clinton at this summer's Democratic National Convention.
The working people built this stage, and now we'll build a new era of shared prosperity. Working people are strong, and Donald Trump is wrong, wrong, wrong.
There was a time when union bosses were able to march their members in lockstep behind a candidate, but that's no longer the case. And this election year, divisions are apparent, with many rank-and-file union participants gravitating toward Trump's call for reining in free trade agreements and immigration. Barely 11% of American workers belong to a union now, down from 20% just 3 decades ago. Republicans in Congress are pushing to build support for the Employee Rights Act, which would require unions to get each member's permission to use his or her dues for political purposes and would guarantee secret elections.
I'm sick of the union taking so much of my money out of every paycheck. I don't know why you guys voted them in.
Don't look at me.
This ad supports the bill.
Only 10% of people in unions today actually voted to join the union. Reason number two for the Employee Rights Act.
Faced with new challenges, American unions are looking for fresh opportunities to expand their reach. One U.S. labor group, for instance, has joined forces with a Chinese Workers Association to coordinate a joint strategy for dealing with Walmart. Just a few days ago, the National Labor Relations Board ruled student teaching and research assistants at private universities have a right to be represented by unions. CBS News correspondent Steve Dorsey discovered an organizing effort in the heartland of high tech.
It could be the last place in the U.S. you'd think workers would need a union. Silicon Valley, with its six-figure starting salaries, free lunches, and unlimited vacation policies.
Silicon Valley and the high tech companies have been a place that have largely avoided unions for decades now.
But Doug Block, Teamsters political director for Northern California, says there's another side to Silicon Valley for the cafeteria workers, campus shuttle drivers, and security officers struggling with poverty. So many unions like the Teamsters are gaining a new foothold in one of the wealthiest areas of the country.
In the last year, we've seen an explosion in organizing.
Tracy Kelly drives a shuttle for Yahoo, where he organized a Teamsters union.
Before the union came, we had drivers living in their cars. They weren't able to afford a place to live.
Teamsters estimates about a third of Silicon Valley shuttle drivers are now unionized.
Drivers drive as far as 100 miles or more, some of them, to get to work.
Block says Teamsters drivers can now share in part of Silicon Valley's wealth.
They've seen their wages go from $20 to nearly $30 an hour. They're getting retirement packages. They're getting up to 5 weeks of paid vacation. They get sick days. They were catapulted into the middle class overnight.
Meanwhile, on the other side of the country, other low-wage workers supported by the spine of technology are also seeing new opportunities in unions.
Vice, candidly, was very low paid.
Writers Guild of America East Executive Director Lil Peterson has helped workers at New York-based new media organizations like Vice, Huffington Post, and Salon organize with the Guild.
This is an area that's ripe for collective bargaining.
WGAE has joined SAG-AFTRA and the News Guild of New York in recruiting a new generation of journalists, many whose salaries are far behind their counterparts in unionized legacy media like Network TV News or The New York Times.
There's certainly a much greater feeling that, hey, this stuff has a future. And also the people who work in this area are open to thinking about new ways of working.
From coast to coast, it's a digital economy helping to fuel unions in the 21st century.
We're gonna rise up for our quality of life.
For 30 years at the Western Workers Labor Heritage Festival, music of the movement has been played and sung, this year in Burlingame, California.
Making a living shouldn't be about right. We're gonna rise up.
Dan Graff, a Notre Dame history professor, is a fan. Dan, at the Center for Social Concerns there at Notre Dame, you have a webpage that features a different labor song every month.
Labor history is really social history, or the history of the lived experience of ordinary people, and popular music reflects that in all its diversity. Striking or marching workers throughout American history often sang to show unity, or to steel themselves against employer violence, or to call out the larger community to support their cause. The song We Shall Overcome, which many consider the anthem of the classic civil rights movement of the 1950s and 60s, began as a labor union song.
We shall overcome. We shall
Some of the most famous, I would say, that have stood the test of time would be tunes like Solidarity Forever.
Solidarity Forever. Solidarity Forever.
Music has played a role in helping workers keep in unison for safety and health, or to pass the time. And then you have what I would just call modern pop songs that speak to workplace issues and working people's concerns. Mavis Staples, the great R&B, soul, gospel, pop singer, and she released a song this spring called Action that opens with the lines, sick and tired of feeling sick and tired.
This ain't heaven, help us.
They say my words might get me fired.
This ain't heaven, help us.
ACTIO in Action is the chorus, and it could be the anthem for the fight for $15 an hour or these other movements in cities across the country that are trying to push for workers' rights.
Consider this a sign of emergency.
Action,
action,
action.
Who's gonna do it if I don't?
If the workers take a notion, we can stop the speeding trains.
Alexandra Bradbury's carrying on the tradition. She's 33 years old and lives in Brooklyn.
My dad, in the 60s, he got into playing the banjo and the guitar and certainly the folk music movement. So I grew up hearing a lot of old labor songs and got interested in the music of the movement that way.
Every wheel in the creation, every mine and every mill, fleets and armies of all nations will at our command stand still.
Today's jobs, I would say the last several decades of speed up, it has people working more seconds out of every minute for lower wages because we have less power. Young workers not only don't have a union in the workplace, but you know, many people don't have a family member who's in a union or who's ever been on strike. We do have to sort of muster more inspiration in a way that, say, if you were entering the workforce in the 70s.
Well, some folks want the omelet, but they don't want eggs to break. Some folks want the muffins, but they don't want to bake. Some folks want your labor, they don't want to pay vacation. Some folks want their freedom, but they don't want agitation. Power concedes nothing, never has, never will.
America Works, more ahead.
Never will.
You're struggling with your mortgage. You think about it. You don't do anything but think about it.
What are we going to do if we lose the house? Where are we going to go?
At work.
I can't let anybody find out. I'm so embarrassed.
At dinner.
How can I tell the kids? It's going to wreck their lives.
And at 3 o'clock in the morning.
I don't know what to do. I don't know how to get through this. What's going to happen to us?
It's time to stop thinking. It's time to start dialing. Call 1-888-995-HOPE for a free government program that offers expert one-on-one advice about your mortgage options.
I'm all alone.
No, you're not. We've helped over a million homeowners, and we want to help you. And now there are more ways to help. Call 1-888-995-HOPE or visit makinghomeaffordable.gov, brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
When I was little, I didn't talk for a long time. I liked things to always be the same. Anything new or different would scare and upset me. I was very sensitive to lights and sounds. It was almost like I had bigger eyes and ears than everyone else. So I built secret hiding places where nothing could get in. I didn't like looking people in the eye. It made me feel uncomfortable. I'd throw big tantrums over little things, like when my socks didn't match. Sometimes I'd do the same things over and over. Until one day, I found out I had autism. My family got me help. Slowly, I learned how to live with it better.
You can see signs of autism in children as young as 18 months. Early intervention can make a lifetime of difference. Learn the signs at autismspeaks.org/signs. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
On America Works from CBS News, jobs and generations. Many Gen Xers are retiring. Jan Abushakra keeps working.
Many of us find that when we reach the traditional retirement age, we are not able to retire with any kind of financial security.
She heads the gerontology program at Portland Community College in Oregon, a 70-year-old teaching about the process of aging to mostly older students, including an 86-year-old woman.
She worked until she was 79 and got laid off and was really irritated by that.
Jan loves her job.
It's engaging my mind, my emotions.
And that makes her luckier, she says, than a lot of older people who, like her, have to keep earning.
If you're living to be 100 years old, even a good pension and Social Security are not going to be enough.
Used to be about 30 years ago, roughly 11% of people over age 65 continued to work.
That's Deb Whitman at AARP.
Now it's almost 19, and we expect that to go up over time.
They're competing in many cases against younger people who are perceived to have more of the technology skills required in the 2016 workplace. Whitman says fresh skills can be acquired. Old dogs can learn new tricks.
Putting an account together on LinkedIn and using it can be really, really powerful. The way you submit your applications have changed, and so going to a library and getting some training on how to upload the right documentation.
What about the belief many employers have that they can spend less hiring the young?
It's kind of a myth that older workers actually cost that much more. They're more engaged. That helps the bottom line. More likely to stay on over time, so you have less recruitment costs.
My wife Martha and I are baby boomers with a millennial daughter, Laura, who, unlike her dad, can't imagine working at the same place for years and years. She lives and works in the Bay Area, fully embracing what's come to be known as the gig economy, where permanence is passé. Freelance and freedom are paramount.
I'm a graphic designer, and for me that means I work on visual design for anything from websites to print magazine ads to book design.
When you first went to California, you worked for a more traditional company, one that provided wages and benefits, and then you went out on your own. What sort of things did you have to consider?
It's always scary thinking about your future, your 401k, thinking about health insurance, all of those things that in traditional companies they take care of for you. So those are the things I had to start thinking of months ahead of time. But I saw a lot of my friends breaking out on their own and realizing that the days are disappearing of pensions and of companies giving you lifelong employment. It starts to make more and more sense to tackle an independent lifestyle earlier on, and so I can start taking control of my own future.
This is Jim Moffitt, Deloitte Consulting Global CEO.
Jim Moffitt's company, one of the world's preeminent service providers for business, conducts an annual survey of millennials to help companies understand this unique generation and how to reach them. After all, they're the largest segment of the American workforce. The online headline for this year's report reads, Millennials have one foot out the door.
Greater than 50% indicated that they're looking for opportunities outside the firm over the next couple of years.
Moffitt says that presents real challenges for firms trying to retain talent.
And to the extent that you have not been emphasizing a narrative that includes values and purpose, you need to bring that to the front and center. And then you need to put in place some mentorship programs. The millennials that felt that they were getting good mentorship and stewardship had a much higher likelihood to stay and to think favorably of the organization they're working with.
Deloitte offers a compressed work week to its employees to give them more flexibility to manage their time for their particular needs. Just a few days ago, Amazon said it's experimenting with a 30-hour week with full benefits, testing it on a handful of workers at first. CBS News financial contributor Melody Hobson sees advantages.
A traditional work schedule may not be one size fits all. Maybe bringing in more women. Women obviously make up a huge percentage of their customer base and may need more flexibility when it comes to child rearing, etc.
The Seattle band Taco Cat has a sort of anthem for millennials. It's called Leisure Bees, as opposed to Worker Bees. This emphasis, even insistence, on not sacrificing play for work has led some to conclude that many millennials are lazy and hard to manage, that they don't have a strong work ethic. Gene Twenge, a psychologist at San Diego State University, spends a lot of time tracking the attributes and attitudes of this group. I love that you've asked your classes to name five good things and five bad things about their generation.
They say that their generation is tech savvy and energetic, but then for the downsides, many of them put lazy on that list, which for a very long time, I told them there's not really any evidence for that. I'm not so sure that's true. I started looking more closely at some of these surveys. 38% of millennials said that they might not want to work that hard, compared to only 26% of boomers. That's a pretty substantial increase. And that's what they say about themselves.
We've recently been reminded there are some millennials that have an incredible work ethic. Correspondent Steve Futterman put in a lot of long days himself covering them at the Summer Olympics in Rio.
Every 4 years at every Summer Olympics, we see American athletes reach the highest of heights. More often than not, it's Americans that win the most gold medals. And that's exactly what happened here in Rio last month.
Phelps gets Olympic gold medal number 23.
There was, of course, Michael Phelps and Simone Biles.
Simone Biles does it again. It's her fourth gold medal here in Rio.
All of these athletes, whether they are household names or not, have stories of hard work, of training and sacrifices. Michelle Carter is also one of those athletes.
Actually, starting from a young age, when I started in seventh grade doing track and field.
Michelle Carter is not a household name. She competes in an event that no one would ever call glamorous, the women's shot put.
And then when I went into summer track, that was the last of summer vacations. Every summer, I was traveling and competing. And sometimes I felt sad because I couldn't hang out on Saturday nights or Friday nights because I have a track meet to go to the next morning.
For her, like the others, there have been many long days over many long years, especially in college.
We had 6 o'clock in the morning weights, go straight into 8 o'clock class, have class all the way up to 1, you go to lunch, study hall at 3, practice at 6, send in another study hall and tutors after that.
After all the time and effort, literally hundreds of hours to reach the point here in Rio, Michelle Carter won the gold medal on her final throw.
Oh, wow, Carter! Over 20 meters.
You can hear the excitement in the voices of the NBC announcers.
And there it is, the gold medal putt.
After winning the gold medal, Michelle Carter knows the sacrifices were worth it.
I just stuck to the plan, and my friends and my family, they understand. They supported me.
Steve Futterman, CBS News, Rio de Janeiro. But you will
remember me. This song, Fall Out Boy's Centuries, is on the playlist that psyched up Dana Vollmer, the supermom who won 3 medals in Rio. America Works.
Hi, this is Terry Crews, actor, former football player, game show host, father of 5, and all-around big dude. I'm also an expert on drama. I know all kinds of drama. There's the good kind that comes with having a house full of kids. There's the bad kind, like season-ending injuries. There's the necessary kind, like having an agent in Hollywood. And there's silly drama, like the drama around my percolating pectorals. And then there's the drama you can skip.
Skip the drama that comes with not having your high school diploma or equivalency. Find free adult education classes near you and finish your high school diploma. Visit finishyourdiploma.org.
Or text DIPLOMA to 97779. Message and data rates may apply. Reply STOP to opt out. That's DIPLOMA to 97779. And leave the drama to actors like me.
Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ed Council.
Adopt US Kids presents Multiple Choice Parenting.
Your daughter just had her first breakup. Do you A, put yourself in her shoes?
How could he do this to you? And for Sheila, she has split ends.
B, console her.
Oh, sweetie, this is going to happen a lot. 4, maybe 5 more times before you get married.
C, take charge.
Gotta get this all straightened out. Give a little talking to man, mano a mano. Hey, Steve! It's now a good time? No? Okay, no problem. Bye.
Or D, help her find a new boyfriend.
I know a great place to meet boys. The internet. Nice, single boys. Never mind. How about some ice cream?
As a parent, there are no perfect answers. But you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same.
For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
And Pizza is a rapidly expanding D.C.-based business. Craft pizzas you build yourself.
Ancient wheat. I'll do regular and a little bit of the garlic.
When Quentin Smothers and Jason Harmon were hired here, they were both surprised to learn they would be paid more than employees at similar places. And Pizza is a supporter of the Fight for 15 movement to raise the minimum wage.
I figured it was just like any other job, you know, but then they went over everything, the details and stuff, and I was like, oh, okay, that's what's up. Definitely more than I expected.
And then it continually started to go up, especially with the Fight for 15 going, you know, and they're being one of the first few places to do it, so it was unexpected. I had no idea that it was going to be somewhere where I could potentially make a little bit more than counterparts at a different company would be.
Co-founder and chief executive Michael Astoria.
It's been something that has been an important point to us, making sure that we're paying as close to a living wage as we can afford.
Have you noticed any difference in employee retention?
We have definitely seen improvement. Our turnover year to date is about 67%, which is well below the industry average. You develop a trust and a bond.
I'm Stephen Portnoy. The Fight for 15 began a few years ago with protests.
We're not going to give up until we get 15.
No one can survive off of 8.15 an hour. It's almost impossible.
The effort has been successful, with laws eventually raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour, now in place in New York and California and cities like Seattle, San Francisco, Chicago, and Washington, D.C. But the federal minimum wage is still half that, $7.25, where it's been for more than 7 years now.
Even with
in a State of the Union address at the beginning of his second term, President Obama called for a modest increase.
Let's declare that in the wealthiest nation on earth, no one who works full-time should have to live in poverty, and raise the federal minimum wage to $9 an hour.
That was 3.5 years ago. Since, the White House has pushed for $12 an hour. And after she was pressured by Bernie Sanders, Hillary Clinton ended her quest for the Democratic nomination, embracing a $15 hourly minimum wage. But Republicans have remained steadfastly opposed to such an increase. Donald Trump has suggested wages for low-skilled workers in the U.S. are already too high, and he says the issue should be left to the states. House Speaker Paul Ryan in June argued there's a better way to lift people out of poverty than by mandating higher wages.
I started working at McDonald's at minimum wage, and it was a great way to learn skills. The problem is, when you price jobs out of place from people who are starting, they're not going to get a start.
And many economists say Ryan has a point. Princeton University professor Alan Krueger, who led President Obama's Council of Economic Advisors and has done extensive research on this subject, wrote in the New York Times last year that a $15 an hour minimum wage could well be counterproductive and is a risk not worth taking. He told us,
at a certain point, a minimum wage could be set too high, in which case it might not help those it's intended to help.
One business owner puts it this way.
They may get a pay raise, but they're going to cut them back on their hours, so they're not going to make any more money.
Or worse, employers could eliminate jobs altogether. The Congressional Budget Office, the official nonpartisan arbiter of such things on Capitol Hill, said in 2014 that raising the federal minimum wage to $10.10 an hour would lead to up to 1 million job losses.
Dr. Krueger, let me ask you, in your expert opinion, if you were to advise the next president, what should the minimum wage be nationally? How high should it go?
It's my view that raising the minimum wage up to as high as, say, $12 an hour would give a substantial boost for our lowest wage workers, but not have a noticeable impact on employment.
The federal minimum wage was enacted in the depths of the Great Depression. If it had been indexed to inflation in 1968, it would be $11 an hour today, not $7.25. Barry?
Working 9 to 5, what a way to make a living.
Dolly Parton's Grammy-winning title song for the hit movie that highlighted sexism in the workplace. 36 years later, it's still very much an issue. Full-time female workers make about 80 cents for every dollar earned by a man. Legal analyst Ricky Kleeman spoke on CBS This Morning recently about sexual harassment.
Sexual harassment affects every person, not only women, but it can also be sexual harassment of woman on woman, man on woman, woman on man. But the usual victims are women, strong or weak. If you feel safe, you should confront your harasser. You should say, what you are saying to me, what you are doing, I don't like, and I don't want you to do it again. Putting the harasser on notice, make a personal record, keep a journal. You should absolutely go to human resources or a superior. You should look at what your company's policy is, complain promptly, and you must be specific. You can't say, he's making me feel awkward.
The Equal Opportunity Employment Commission receives about 20,000 age discrimination complaints every year. AARP's Lori McCann believes far more cases never are brought to light.
We as a society still hold so many stereotypes about older workers, their productivity, their commitment to jobs, and hiring. What we're seeing a lot of is the whole online applications. Unbelievably, they'll actually ask for date of birth. Do we know that they're screening them out? No, but, you know, it certainly gives them a good opportunity. As far as terminations, sometimes you'll see manipulation of performance reviews, and you'll often see people who had been great employees for years all of a sudden be downwardly assessed.
Then there's what many workers would view as a form of discrimination, but what many investors would say is simply common sense. Businesses shifting money away from employees towards stockholders. Rick Wartzman is with the Drucker Institute, which studies and advises corporations and other institutions. He's author of the upcoming book, The End of Loyalty, The Rise and Fall of Good Jobs in America. Companies used to feel that they had a social contract of sorts with workers. What did that mean for their employees?
There was really an kind of implicit understanding that if you showed up to work every day and were loyal and worked reasonably hard, the company would take care of you in many ways. There was good and rising pay, guaranteed pensions, not 401ks, and rising health care benefits as well. Really, in the mid-70s and greatly accelerated through the 80s and 90s, workers weren't as important as they once were. Shareholders were everything.
In the last seven deals that I've been involved with, there were 2.5 million stockholders who have made a pre-tax profit of $12 billion.
Michael Douglas delivering Gordon Gekko's classic Greed is Good speech in the 1987 film Wall Street.
I am not a destroyer of companies. I am a liberator of them.
CBS News business analyst Jill Schlesinger.
Labor, say in like the early 1990s, actually captured something like 66% of all income. That number dropped to 62% in the 2000s and actually to the high 50s now. And what is driving that? Corporations said instead of putting out raises to everybody, maybe what we'll do is we'll send the money to shareholders. Now, great news if you have a 401k, right? Terrible news if you're a worker who doesn't have a 401k.
I said, make the money, don't let the money make you change again. Don't let the game change you.
Do you like your job? Correspondent Dave Barrett gets some answers to that important question when America Works continues.
Listen to the news right now in your car with the CBS Radio News app. Just download our free app to your iOS or Android device to stream the news you need on Apple CarPlay or Android Auto. Listen to the latest news right now or to your favorites like Face the Nation and the Weekend Roundup. The CBS Radio News app. Download it on your phone now to use in Apple CarPlay and Android Auto today.
I'm in almost every school bus and classroom.
I go to school with your children.
We say the Pledge of Allegiance together.
You see me around the neighborhood, and you tell me that I'm a pretty good kid.
Well, I'm one out of every five children in America, and I'm struggling with hunger.
This problem is closer than you think. My teacher tells me we can grow up to be whatever we want.
I want to grow up to be someone who doesn't go to bed hungry.
There's enough food in this country to feed everybody.
please visit feedingamerica.org today and find your local food bank for ways to help.
Every dollar you donate helps provide 8 meals for kids like me, quietly struggling with hunger.
Together, we are Feeding America, brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Download now the updated CBS Radio News apps for Android and iOS. You'll get the latest breaking news, text alerts, and access to the CBS Radio News Twitter feeds. All this along with the great news, features, and shows you've come to expect. 60 Minutes, Face the Nation, The Weekend Roundup, and more, all when you want them. For the best news reporting, download the CBS Radio News mobile app for iOS and Android today.
What was your first 7 jobs before you got grown up and found out who you was and started stacking dough up?
Hip-hop freestyler 11 reworking a Kent Jones tune to mark a Twitter trend, hashtag first 7 jobs. You get a sense of how people you know and celebrities you don't got their starts in the workplace.
Started out a paperboy, prep cook, then busboy. None of these situations I did really ever enjoy.
How do you like your job? Here's correspondent Dave Barrett.
Passing a New York City construction site, I stopped to talk with Richie. He drives a truck, a cement mixer. This stop was in Midtown to deliver concrete at a site where some apartment towers are going up. Richie was straight to the point about the task at hand.
Get the truck to the job safely, and you got to have the concrete off in 2 hours.
He's brought concrete to many, many sites over 28 years.
What do I like about it? You're always somewhere different in Manhattan. See a lot of things, a lot of people, if you're a people person.
Richie from Queens says all the tradespeople, the drivers, the crane operators, everybody, feels good about Labor Day, about how they work together. So does this feeling apply in general to Americans when they go off to work every day?
People want to feel good that there's actually room for them to grow, that there's advancement opportunities.
Career trends analyst Scott Dobrowski is with Glassdoor, a firm that reviews companies and their management. He also says employees tend to be happier when they're on board with the company culture.
They believe in the company mission because that keeps them motivated to be productive, to be creative.
At New York University, business professor Anat Lechner cautions bosses who can't delegate may be a hindrance to your happiness.
Micromanagers, the more micro they are, the worse of an environment they create.
Scott Dobrowski says research shows this work trend.
When we look at how employees rate their work-life balance, it has consistently gone down.
Technology advances are part of the reason.
You can be connected to work 24/7, 365 days a year.
Anat Lechner says this may be more challenging in the coming years.
We can work from anywhere, and the blending of work and life is increasing.
These experts say adapting with limits may push your job satisfaction level higher.
The happiest workers in America are in Idaho. That's what Monster and Brandwatch concluded after examining over 2 million tweets expressing job sentiments across the U.S. T-Sheets in Boise regularly tops a list of best places to work there. It's a company that provides online software for small businesses to track workers' schedules and hours. T-Sheets' website is jammed with pictures of smiling workers striking funny poses. So it was a no-brainer hooking up with CEO Matt Rissell to find out what's going on there. Your website jokes, yes, we are in the West. And yes, we have electricity. Do you think that people have misconceptions about what Idaho is about?
I don't think that there are misconceptions. I know that there are misconceptions about Idaho. Not many folks actually really know about Idaho. And then if they do, the very first thing that they say is, do you pack potatoes everywhere you go? But once they get here, their tone changes dramatically. And they love what they find. They love living here. And as a result, I think there's a direct reflection on your general happiness and your health of who you are as a human being makes a big impact on what kind of teammate, what kind of employee you are.
How has technology changed the ability of firms like T-Sheets throughout a state such as Idaho to really attract good people in a way that perhaps businesses couldn't do, say, 50, 100 years ago?
Technology has completely changed your ability to impact the world and still work in a place like Boise, Idaho. We have customers in over 112 countries. And that is having a direct correlation, I think, to the growth that we're seeing in Boise, Idaho.
There are people who love their jobs so much they skip vacation time. Or is it something else?
People feel scared if they do take vacation, they'll come back to no job. That's a legacy of the recession. The other reason is people actually don't feel as if they have value if they're not working.
Tony Schwartz heads the energy company, which coaches businesses on how to be more productive.
I run a company that goes and tells employers to give more vacation, not less.
16 years ago, the average American took nearly 3 weeks of vacation time every year. Now it's just over 2 weeks. Last year, 55% of Americans didn't use all the time off they were due, giving back 658 million days. 3 out of 10 do work while on vacation. Schwartz isn't surprised a growing number of companies are forcing workers to get away for a while.
There's a study of 50,000 people, Ernst & Young, that found that the quality of the performance reviews increased with every additional vacation day they took. The question is not how many hours you work. The question is, what do you accomplish during the hours you work?
Stress and burnout don't accomplish much of anything.
And you got to keep refueling the tank. And when you do that, you're more productive when you are working.
Hope you're getting at least a little break over the holiday. Our Zach Newman strolled around New York's Columbus Circle and found people do a lot of different things on Labor Day.
Hang out with family, friends, have a good time. Bars.
It's a day to stop our labor and think about people who work hard.
Oh, it's usually our last barbecue. Sometimes we do hot dogs and hamburgers. Sometimes my husband makes steak.
Well, I'm Jamaican, so we make lots of Jamaican food and jerk stuff. Like jerk chicken, jerk pork, curry goat, oxtail, rice and peas, stuff like that.
On Labor Day, I like going to the beach, knocking back a few cold ones, and just relaxing.
My family, we just didn't have a lot of money, so a holiday was just really another day for us. My mom would work or my dad would work, and I would just try to find something to do.
Lots of people do have to work, from our police and firefighters, restaurant servers, hotel maids, all those retail clerks serving shoppers looking for holiday weekend deals.
The big Lord & Taylor Labor Day sale is happening now. Sleepy's Labor Day holiday sale is going on now.
This holiday weekend, there's something you don't want to miss. 20% off every window, plus a special factory rebate.
It's Labor Day
at Sport Honda Silver
Spring. And of course, hospitals can never shut down. There are patients to care for, from the old to the freshly born.
Good morning. Good morning, Michelle.
Kai Sagana has been a nurse at MedStar Georgetown University Hospital on and off for 15 years. Being on duty in the delivery room on Labor Day and other holidays?
It's required. Yes, and I've done my share of many holidays. So we definitely have to be on our toes. We don't know what's coming through those doors. An emergency can happen at any moment. We're definitely always prepared. And babies are not on schedule. I have two boys, and a lot of times I am working the holiday days and calling in and seeing all the fun that they're having. You know, of course, I'm sad that I can't be there with them. But they understand that mom has to deliver the babies and the nature of my job.
Bringing the next generation of workers into the world in a place where every day is Labor Day. Thanks to our contributing correspondents, Dave Barrett, Steve Dorsey, Steve Futterman, Peter King, Jim Krasula, and Stephen Portnoy, and to Dustin Gervais, Gail Lee, and Zach Newman, to Howard Ehrenstein, our executive producer, and our bosses, Harvey Nagler and Constance Lloyd. America Works from CBS News. I'm Barry Bagnato.
So when you get to the corner of Smith and Orchard, you're going to want to take a
you
left.
Are not going to
then
believe
what you're
this.
Do is turn Marcy,
Marcy and Brad
Avenue
just broke up,
and go past
and apparently
the first three
she's
lights,
happy about
and then
it.
Take the next left.
I don't really think she's happy, but
you should be
who
there.
Am I to judge, right?
Park
anyway,
on the right.
That's
I'll
what I heard last night.
It's hard to concentrate on two things at once, like texting and driving. Stop the text, stop the wrecks. How will you stop texting and driving? Tell us at stoptextstopwrecks.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
When I grow up, I want to be a new pair of blue jeans.
When I grow up, I want to be a kid's first computer.
I want to be a bike that races around the country.
I want to be a bench on a forest trail.
When I grow up, I don't want to be a piece of garbage. And if you recycle me, I won't be.
Give your garbage another life. Recycle. Learn how at iwanttoberecycled.org. Brought to you by Keep America Beautiful and the Ad Council.
Is that a faucet running?
That's not a faucet. That's a river rushing through the forest. Forest rivers provide over 100 million people with clean water to drink.
What? I can't hear you because of the vacuum.
That's not a vacuum. That's the trees in the forest cleaning up the air we breathe.
I didn't know the trees were so amazing.
Yep, and the forest gives us shade, trees to climb.
That's awesome. Let's go explore some more.
Visit the forest today and enjoy all it does just for you. To learn more about the forest and find one near you, go to discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
So, I'm a dog, and I just got adopted by this new human guy, and I'm starting to wonder how he got along without me. I mean, okay, something as simple as walking around the block. He's got this leash thing, and he puts me on one end and him on the other, and I'm just taking him around. I think he's afraid of getting lost. Without that leash and me guiding him along, I don't think he'd find his way back home. But it's kind of cute.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.